Advaitic Sadhana by S.S. Cohen, continued from the September-October issue. Chapter 3. Dhyana. Below is the conclusion of Chapter 3 on Dhyana, Meditation, from S.S. Cohen's 1975 publication titled Advaitic Sadhana. To those who are unable to choose their own subjects for concentration, the following hints are given. 1. Meditation on the nature of the being, which is the source and substratum of all thoughts known in the Shrutis, the revealed scriptures, as the akasa, either of consciousness or heart, develops an intuition of it, wearing away all the images from the meditating mind, polishing it, and finally revealing it to be the shining sun of knowledge, free from the dark cloud of the phenomena or thoughts that have hitherto been covering it. Its other names are Chit, Chaitanya, Atman, Paramatman, Pure Mind, Pure Consciousness, Self, Supreme Self, etc. Shandilya Upanishad describes this practice graphically thus. O Shandilya, be happy. Place the self in the midst of the akasa, and the akasa in the midst of the self, and having reduced everything to akasa, do not think. You will not entertain then either internal or external thoughts. Abandoning all thoughts, become abstract thought itself. As camphor dissolves in fire and salt in water, so does manas, the thinking faculty, dissolve in tattva, the reality. What is termed manas is the knowledge of everything that is cognized. When this knowledge and the cognized object are alike lost, there is no second path. By giving up all cognition of thoughts, the manas is absorbed, and kaivalya, the aloneness of being, remains. It will be observed that this approaches the reality, sat, chit, ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, from its chit aspect, that is, as consciousness. 2. Another helpful method is to begin meditation with a happy mood, with no object in view, but the feeling of happiness in the heart. This can be created in so many ways in the imagination and maintained throughout the duration of meditation. Happiness, being the nature of the self, facilitates the approach to it, provided the mind is kept easy, thought-free, and alert, without self-assertiveness. The mental and physical relaxation which precedes sleep is also felt here, but without its companion, torpor. They should be held on to for as long a time as possible, and whenever a thought appears, it should be immediately checked to prevent a return to the welter of thinking and feeling. A conscious, thought-free, and happy alertness is the principal ingredient of this method, and when made firm by practice, it will eventually turn out to be the very consciousness of the quest. If a blank state supervenes in meditation, it should be ignored and not dwelt upon, for it will dissipate in the course of the practice. The thought of the blank is more harmful to the meditation than the blank itself. This approaches the reality from its ananda, bliss aspect. 3. Sri Ramana Maharishi takes the search for the root of the I sense to yield the best results, and so it has proved to many of his disciples. It is based on the undeniable fact of one's own existence, which is self-evident, and as existence is, by its very definition, eternal and absolute, tracing one's I to its source is bound to reveal its truth. The common man identifies this I with the body and becomes inextricably involved in the complex problems of the body. But the seeker has since a long time detached himself from the grossest form of this identification, as is proved by his spiritual urge. When he appears before the Guru and determines to dedicate himself to the life of the spirit, it is obvious that his body-I relation has become attenuated enough to break down when persistently challenged by investigations, which in this school consists of the self-inquiry, who am I? The knot which ties the one to the other grows looser as the seeker's attention is more and more diverted from the insentient body to the nature of his sentient I. This inquiry, vichara, which is associated with the Maharishi's name, when thoroughly mastered and intelligently applied, acts in two ways. By meditation, it wards off all other thoughts and retains the mind's purity. And by analysis and reflection, it exposes the insentience and transience of the body as contrasted with the infinite, intelligent I, which pervades it as life and consciousness. As the water in which a sponge has been soaked alone remains after the sponge is removed, so does the intelligent pervader of the body alone remain when the body or body thought is cut down by the dual process of vichara and dhyana. This approach to the absolute is from the sat or being aspect. 4. There is yet another method which is used in dhyana yoga by the few who cannot straightaway begin meditation, namely breath control, pranayama. A vast literature has been written on this method, with which, however, this yoga does not concern itself, except for the sole purpose of stabilizing the mind. It is a proven fact that breathing and thinking function simultaneously in the waking state, so that if the breath is controlled by a special exercise, the thinking faculty follows suit as a matter of course. With alternate inhaling and exhaling, there comes in between them a short period of rest called kumbhaka, which secures a corresponding rest in the mind, and which by practice can be lengthened at will to bring the attention to a focus from which the dhyana can start on its own. This is the strict use that the dhyana yogi makes of the pranayama. If he goes much farther than this or fails to resort to dhyana, he ceases to be a dhyana yogi, but a digressor into practices which lead to unpredictable ends. The foregoing few methods of dhyana are, let it be clearly understood, mere hints to the sadhaka to include in his own peculiar approach. Hints are also the guru's directions. Meditation, being the spontaneous urge of the external man to surrender himself, his thoughts and feelings, to the eternal in him, is purely individual, so that it may be truly said that meditation has as many forms as there are meditators. It may even begin with an external worship, upasana, or devotional outpourings, and gradually mellows down to the point where thoughts are suspended. including that of the worshipped object, leaving the yogi's own self alone as the ultimate residue. In all cases, the external worship has eventually to turn upon itself and become self-worship, which is the highest bhakti, parabhakti, than which there is no higher. It has to be remembered that one and only one method should be used at a time, or else the yogi will be completely baffled. If he is in doubt about the advantage of his approach, he should try the one that he thinks suits him best, give it a fair trial, and then abandon it should it prove unsuitable, till he finally stumbles on the best and easiest. Generally, yogis find their own form of meditation almost from the start, as naturally as free water finds its own level by an immutable natural law. Continued in the January-February 2007 issue.